begin with, I would like to thank Madam President and the members of the auxiliary for letting us have this hall to put up our program and to help to have them celebrate with us. Our President, Bruce Thomas, wanted us to celebrate the 65th anniversary of Eagle and McFaur. We put up a little program together and hope it meets with his approval. And without further ado, I call on Brother Bill Cashin for a few historical points to bring before you. Brother Cashin.
Thank you, Brother Stock. Few historical points had to be gathered in a few different places. I don't think there's a good history of the pioneers in one place. But fortunately, I have access to some material at the university library, so I was able to look in several places and come up with a little bit of historical background on the pioneers of Alaska. One of the best, I think, is a short piece written by Bob DeArmond in a copy of the Alaska Sportsman in 1961. And he went back and traced a few of the organizations that were organized in Alaska for pioneers prior to the organization that we belong to. And just for a point of interest, these are some of them. The Sons of the Northwest group was organized in Sitka in 1887. The Yukon Order of Pioneers at 40 Mile in 1894. The Order of Alaska Moose, which had no connection with the Loyal Order of Moose, was organized in Valdez in 1899. A group called the Alaska Pioneers was organized in Kodiak about the same time. A group known as the 87 Pioneers Association was organized in Juneau in 1908. In the old Territorial Museum in Juneau, I recall that they had a picture gallery of these pioneers of 87 on the wall, much the same as we have pictures in our hall across the way there. And I remember it especially because my grandfather, Nick King, had his picture there with the 87 pioneers. And that group had to, of course, been here in Alaska in 1887. But as you can well imagine, that was the Southeastern group. Another group, and probably the most notorious prior to ours, was the Arctic Brotherhood. And the Arctic Brotherhood was a group that was organized in 1899 aboard the city of Seattle. There were aboard 11 men who had been up in the Klondike the year before and had gone outside. And on their way back to Skagway, they were aboard the city of Seattle and decided that it would be a good idea to form a lodge of some kind. And so they organized and they called themselves the Arctic Brotherhood. And seven of them went on over into the Klondike. Four of them remained in Skagway and organized this camp number one. Now, this group did pretty well, and eventually about 25 different camps of this Arctic Brotherhood was organized around the territory on both sides of the international boundary. Their motto, in fact, was "No Boundary Line Here." And the interesting thing about this group, they held their annual conventions in Seattle or Tacoma or down over in Vancouver. So they were the fellows that rather commuted back and forth, I guess, in the gold fields. But they were quite an influential bunch. And among their accomplishments was the fact that they entertained President Teddy Roosevelt when he came to Seattle in 1903. They put on a reception and a big feed honoring President Roosevelt. They were instrumental in getting a delegate to Congress from Alaska, and they were leaders in the getting going the Alaska-Yukon Exposition in Seattle in 1909. In 1909, they had about 25 camps established, and Fairbanks had camp number 10 of this group. One of the little interesting sidelights was the fact that in the Fairbanks fire here of 1906, in May of 1906, it wasn't long after the San Francisco earthquake. And there had been a local drive on to raise money to help the people that were thrown out of their homes in San Francisco. And so the Arctic Brotherhood had the mayor of Seattle and the Chamber of Commerce there send a message to Fairbanks when the Fairbanks fire and asked if they needed any assistance up here. Fairbanks wired back, "Thanks, no assistance needed. Somewhat disfigured, but still on the pay streak. And have money for the San Francisco sufferers if they still need it." So they were a pretty rambunctious bunch, I would say. Some of the names that you find on the roster of that old Arctic Brotherhood here in Fairbanks included L.L. James and Dr. W.G. Castles, James Hall, Charles Taylor, the Reverend S. Hall Young, J.J. Buckley, Ed Stroker, Charles Souter, V.L. Bevington, Frank Buteau, James Hill, and James Wickersham. Some of those names I'm sure some of you recall. The lodge in 1909 had Dr. A.J. Sutherland as its Arctic chief here in the Fairbanks group. Now, another piece of literature that I found of interest was the magazine called The Pathfinder of Alaska, which was sponsored and was the official organ of the Grand Lodge of the Pioneers of Alaska. And it was published from 1919 until 1926. And the editor was John W. Frame. And it's really an excellent magazine. And many of you have copies of your own, and they have a nice file of all of the copies at the university. I looked in volume one, number one, which was published in November 1919, and the editor gave this little account of the founding of the Pioneers of Alaska Lodge, our lodge here. He said, "This order was organized in Nome on the 20th day of February, 1907. A number of men who came to the country prior to 1901 asked for admission to the Yukon Order of Pioneers, but they were refused for the reason that the order required a residence in the north prior to 1896. This question was being discussed one evening in Joe Jordan's saloon in Nome when someone suggested that a new organization be established, fixing the date of eligibility at as January the 1st, 1901. It was no sooner said than done. A night was fixed for the organization, and 200 men affixed their names to the Constitution. In a short time, there were 500 members. The Candle Boys were there and determined to have an igloo of their own. So along on June, igloo number 2 was established in Candle. The spirit of companionship or brotherhood later spread to St. Michael, and on May 10th, 1908, igloo number 3 was established there. These three igloos then wished to congregate with each other. So on August the 4th, 1908, the first annual Grand Igloo session was held in Nome. And since that time, 14 other igloos have been organized as follows. And then they list the following, and I'll just read them down the list. Number 4, Fairbanks. Number 5, Ruby. Number 6, Juno. Number 7, Valdez. 8, Wiseman. 9, Seward. 10, Iditarod. 11, Ophir. 12, Skagway. 13, Tanana. 14, Takotna. 15, Anchorage. 16, Ketchikan. 17, Nenana. And those were the ones that were organized at the time this article was written in 1919. There's a little additional material that Frame wrote, and I don't know all the implications, but some of you women might know the in-betweens of this. But he went on to say there are four Pioneer Women of Alaska organizations known as auxiliaries. The first one of these was organized in Nome, number 2 is at Valdez, number 3 is at Fairbanks, number 4 is at Anchorage. And then he goes on to say about the eligibility of the pioneers was to, the applicant must have come to Alaska prior to January 1st, 1901, and his interests must have been dominantly identified with Alaska since that time. None but white male Alaskans are eligible, but by vote of each igloo for itself, women having the same qualifications as men can belong. I don't know how many members they got. Well, the purpose of the Pioneers of Alaska, it says, is to unite the old-timers of Alaska and by a permanent organization preserve the names of all the early settlers on its rolls, to collect and preserve the incidents of Alaska's literature and history, and to promote the best interests of the territory. Pretty much the same as we have today. I then looked up the founding of the Igloo Number 4, and for that we're rather blessed at the university to have a file of all the early day newspapers. So I was able to find the copy of the Fairbanks News Miner for Monday, November the 22nd, 1909. And quite a good article, as usual, almost more headlines than story. And the headlines read, Pioneers to meet tonight. Organization of a local igloo will be perfected this evening. Attendance to be large. Every pioneer who has been in the country since 1898 is eligible to join. The article went on to show that the crowd exceeded their expectations. About 140 had signed the original charter, but something like 300 showed up. And then the next night, the paper came out with the list of the elected officers and so forth. And it said, Pioneers of Alaska held a rousing meeting at the Eagles Hall, 300 members, officers are chosen. Most prominent men in Fairbanks are included in the list. And it went on, the president was Leroy Tozer, first vice president William McPhee, J.A. Shute was second vice president, James Thornton, treasurer, John Dillon, secretary, R.M. Brown, sergeant at arms, the Reverend Condit, chaplain, Harry Cribb, David Petrie, and A.J. Nordale, trustees. The article made this little comment. It said, the speech made by Sam Kincaid in nominating R.M. Brown for sergeant at arms brought down the house. Now, do the old-timers, R.M. Brown was Waterfront Brown, and he was that famous bill collector that used to stand down here when the river boats were taken off, checking out who was leaving town. So I guess there was some poetic justice in appointing R.M. Brown as sergeant at arms for the lodge. He could guard well that door. The article went on to say that William McPhee and Harry Cribb, members of the old Yukon Order of Pioneers, were leaders of the movement to organize the Igloo Number 4 here. And the qualifications, again, were they had to have been in the territory prior to January 1st, 1899. So I think that was the way it was until it was changed just a few years later. The Pathfinder, I think, also had, as I glanced through the book, I found some other articles of interest, and I think I'll close my remarks by reading a little bit of what the Pathfinder reported about the Fairbanks Igloo on January 1921. There was a new election of officers, and these names are somewhat more familiar to us, I think. As past president, there was Emmett Kincaid, and the new officers in 1921 were President J.M. Cunningham, first vice president A.M. Olson, second vice president Robert E. Sheldon, historian Ed B. Davis, chaplain J.H. Groves, secretary George Moody, sergeant at arms Peter Dizer, and trustees Dr. M.F. Hall and R.A. Perkins, treasurer George Hutchison, doorkeeper Tony Tate. The article went on, after the installation ceremonies, the business meeting was brought to a close and the attention of the members was called to a sourdough lunch prepared by the refreshment committee. It was a great success. The evening closed with an entertainment arranged by the old entertainment committee, which was a fitting close to their year's activity. The following were the entertainers taking part. And they must have had a lot of talent in Fairbanks in those days, but this was what the entertainment committee cooked up for this grand celebration. Musical selection, Bill O'Connor and Frank Young. A song by William Haldane, Step Dancing by Billy McGrath. A song by L.R. Gillette, another musical number by O'Connor and Young, and a song by Thomas O'Connor, another song by Thomas White, and last on the program, and probably the climax, a speech by Robert Sheldon.
Thank you, Brother Bill. Now, the next in line should have been Carl Carlson for a little cheering music. But it turned out he couldn't make it. He had to go out to the university. So we'll go from here on. At this time, I would like to call on my wife, Mary. She has a poem fitting for the occasion. Would you please step up?
If you don't get anyone else to do it, get your wife. Now this poem, can you hear me? This poem was written in Cordova for the convention in 1963 by Reverend Bert Hall. And I think that you will agree with me, it bears repeating in honor of all the pioneers who ever touched this great state. The spirit of a pioneer. Many have sensed as the years went by, but only a few have heard the cry that something that's hard to define, not clear, the call that comes to a pioneer. That surge of the pulse, the rising heart, that feeling that comes but will not part. A call to travel on a road unseen, a beacon to answer the plan of a dream. Such must be the feeling of one who ventures out where the battle's won. Out front where the foot knows not its route, for it travels the path unknown to the boot. Ahead of the crowd and ahead of the throng, a place in front for only the strong. A place way out, not here. A place for only a pioneer. Time has a way of recording the past, though the years fly by ever so fast. For it's all written down in the book of life, just as clear and as sharp as the edge of a knife. It knows and it tells of the lives of men, even as though it were written with pen. And all can see, and any can know, who led the way through the ice and snow, who opened a land so vast and so great, who started a territory that became a state, who cleared the trail for the mountaineers, who led the way, the pioneers. Time, too, has a way of taking its toll. It calls on some who cannot answer the roll, but it records their lives as a monument to all who were called and actually went. Their names may be etched in chunks of stone. Their mortal remains may lie all alone. But none could forget nor ever deny that spirit of theirs that shall never die. But instead shall become to the young and the new a motive for progress as real and as true as the power that led the few to hear the message that came to the pioneers. Transformed perhaps from the search for gold, or found somewhere else than in bitter cold, but radiant still with a burning power, likened almost to a growing flower. See now as it guides in a different way, yet opening doors to a brand new day, leading men along an unknown road, the same spirit, a different mode. For in industry, government, business, or home, it's the same spirit that ever shone in the hearts and lives of those so dear. It's the spirit that's found in a pioneer. Many have sensed as the years went by, but only a few have heard the cry that something hard to define, unclear, that call that comes to a pioneer.
Thank you, Mary. Now, since we are honored with the presence of Bobby Shelton, and he joined the Igloo in 1910, I think he deserves a great big hand. Well, we omit that. Well, now, since this is the final and the finish, let's all go out and enjoy the nice buffet that we have out in the other hall. Thank you. Thank you.